star of our show, Frank Sinatra.
You thought I retired, didn't you? He did, not I. You know why I did that silly introduction? We were just talking about it in the dressing room, about retiring. And we discussed, because so many people ask me when I'm going to retire. I'm never going to retire. Not while the dough was coming in. I probably won't quit working until I'm, 65 or 70 years old. Whichever comes first. See, I can understand a fellow like Sinatra retiring. Not only is he very wealthy, but he has so many hobbies. Good hobby, young ones. You know? I don't know what the hell I'd do if I retired. Well, anyway, for those of you, now that I wasn't introduced, for those of you who have never seen me before, I'm Jack Benny, star of stage, screen, radio, television, concerts, and if you need a Roto-Rooter man, call me. Just let your little fingers run through the yellow paint. You'll find me. But anyway, I must say it's nice to be back here. It's a little over a year ago that I played here. And, oh, first I must tell you, you know my co-star here is Tony Martin. I tell you one thing. He thinks he is the greatest card player of any kind of a game, poker, anything, bridge, gin rummy, he thinks he's the greatest. I just left his dressing room a little while ago. We played gin rummy. I won $120, and you're going to get a hell of a show out of me tonight. And you're going to get a long one, too, because I'm not going to play with him again. He thinks I'm coming back, and he feels awful. Really, to think he lost that kind of money to me. Wait, he comes out here to work. If he sings Pagliacci, there'll be a tear in his voice that'll break your heart. I really mean that. But it is nice. It's nice to be back, and I love playing these kind of theaters, you know, theaters in the round. It's the largest Lazy Susan I've seen. How many saw me when I was here last year? Raise your hand. Oh, did you see me? God, I'll have to do new material. But anyway. But you know, the first time I ever played a theater in the round, I'm not kidding, was when I played here over a year ago. The first time in ever this kind of a theater. And by intermission, I got so dizzy. It's still cheaper than a martini. But I like working here. And another thing, it's close to my home, Waukee, Illinois, you know, where I was born. And I go there a lot. And I was so glad, I'll tell you about Waukee. to find such nice weather when I came here. See, I thought it was going to be very wintry and very cold, and I got in Saturday, and it was such beautiful weather because I just left Fountain Springs where I've been playing golf, and I wanted to play golf here. And Sunday, it was just gorgeous, and I went out to Bryn Mawr, and I played with some friends of mine in Bryn Mawr, Luzon, Jerry Lavin, and we all went out to play. And it was such a gorgeous day, and I'm a lousy golfer, but I got to tell you one thing that happened. You won't believe it. One thing. I was thrilled. I happen to have a good day. Even a bad golfer occasionally, you know, has a good day. So we went out to Bryn Mawr. We got to a par 3 hole. And I was playing pretty good that day. And I came this close. I took a 4-wood. And I came this close to making a hole in one. And I got a 6. Now I know you have to wonder, how can a fella get... anybody get this close to a hole in one and take a 6? I'll show you how it can happen. Easily. You see, I imagine most of you folks play golf, right? So in my anxiety to get a birdie 2, see, I was nervous. I took my putter, you know, and I hit the ball too hard because I was nervous. And I hit it too hard, it rolled over the green and went into a sand. Now I'm lying 2 in the trap. So I took my wedge, I got a good heavy wedge, and I hit a beautiful shot through the trap, and again I was this close to the hole. Only this time it was my wedge, the ball was still in the trap. So I took 2 more shots out of the trap. I landed about 15 feet from the hole, and I conceded the putt. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been here tonight. Well, let me tell you, one day when I actually made a hole in one. Do you remember last February, I think it was, when we had the big earthquake in Los Angeles? You're already beating me to this joke. I just see this already. Because this is not a joke. We had this earthquake at 6 o'clock in the morning. See? And it was really a pretty bad one. We were all nervous. We didn't know what was going to happen. And that whole day, there were little quakes all day long. See? So I went out to Hillcrest in Beverly Hills, where I play nightclub in Los Angeles. And I went to play that afternoon. And again, I got to a par 3 hole, and this time I came this close to a hole in one, and suddenly there was a little quake, and the ball rolled in the hole. So I actually, you know, I got a hole in one. Now, at a country club, when you make a hole in one, you're supposed to go inside and buy everybody in the club drinks. And I wouldn't do it. I told him, I explained, look, I said, my hole-in-one is an act of God. I said, let him buy the drink. But I started to say something else before. What was I talking about? Waukegan. Oh, I'm liking to be here because it's close to my hometown, Waukegan. And I go there a lot. You know, there's a school there named after me. I go visit the kids and I talk to them. And the other day I was in there, just for an hour or so, I went to visit friends of mine, relatives, and a girl I used to go with in Waukegan that I nearly married, really. And she got married to somebody else. She has a son now in Hollywood, you've probably heard of him, Walter Brennan. You know? I'm not such a young kid, you know, but Waukegan I love Waukegan. I was born there years and years and years and years ago. A long, long time ago. Long ago. In fact, our rabbi was an Indian. He used a tomahawk. I'm going to get the you know, you're not going to get that stuff from me that you see in movies and everything. Amazing, the things today you see in movies or hear. You can't take your children to go to a movie or Pat Boone. That's my favorite line in the whole thing. I'm the only one to laugh at. And I'm so stubborn. When I like a joke, damn it, I tell it. Oh, I don't care. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, I am the master of ceremonies whenever I play a theater. You see, I'm the MC. And I'm going to introduce a fella. I know who I'm going to introduce. I was just looking at certain things I wanted to say about. You know what I am terribly disappointed in, though? That my wife, whom you know as Mary Livingston, couldn't be with me here. And I kind of miss her right now because we just celebrated our 45th wedding anniversary. 45 years. It shows you that it can be done. Even in Hollywood. 45 years, and I still love my wife. I really do. I didn't say it for that. I don't want applause for that. I could love my wife without applause. Believe me, she doesn't applaud me for anything. I can't, but the only thing is, I just can't get her to travel with me anymore. She will not travel. She hates to leave home, you know. And sometimes I have to go away like 7 or 8 weeks. And she lets me go alone, you know. And she trusts me. It's kind of sad that she can't. You know? And you know, just before I left the house, last Saturday was the morning, she called me back. I kissed her goodbye, and she called me back, and she said, Jack. Now, when she says Jack, I have to worry. But she usually calls me Dow or Dow Pain. Dow Pain. But when she calls me back and says Jack, I know there's something wrong. So I went back. I said, what is it? I have something to tell you. And you might not like it, but you might as well know. I said, what? She said, I want you to know that I joined the Women's Liberation Movement. I didn't get angry. You know, I didn't get too mad. But I said to her, all right, so you joined the Women's Liberation. I'd like to know why. Why would you join that? She said, well, you might as well know, I'm not going to make the beds anymore. I'm not going to wash the dishes. I'm not going to cook any meals. I'm not going to do anything. Now I got mad. I said, listen, Miss Livingston, we have been married 45 years. In 40 of those 45 years, we have had 5 in hell. An upstairs maid, a downstairs maid, a cook, a butler, and a chauffeur. I said, when? I was really angry. When in 40 years did you have to do anything in the house? She says, all right. All right, you're right. But I'm warning you about one thing. If I get pregnant... She said, if I get pregnant, I am not going to have the baby. I said, Mary, if you get pregnant, I'm going to fire one of the help. Well, that shut her up for for a while. But we've been very happily married. I would say, in the 45 years that we've been married, naturally, if I said we've never had a fight, you'd say I'm crazy,
right?
You have to fight. But Mary and I have never had a fight big enough where the word divorce was used. Never. Murder, yes. Never divorce. Well, I gotta let somebody come on here. I'll be on tour, because I'm gonna be on all evening, you know. I'll be on after he sings, and I'll be on in the last half. I'm even gonna play the violin for them. Introduce now a very dear friend of mine who, in my opinion, which I respect, is one of the great singers of popular songs of all time, who has one of the most beautiful voices of any of the singers, and really a great guy. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tony Martin.
It's a pleasure. Chicago. I got my start here, and who knows, this may be my finish.
When love walks in and takes you by the hand, ooh, la, 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 Samantha Bigger, and every night your loved one holds you tight.
So for you men that sing in your bathtub, where do I begin to tell the story of how great a love can be? The sweet love story that is older than the sea. The simple truth about the love you bring to me. Where do I start? With her first hello, she brought a meaning to this empty world of mine. There'll never be another love another time. She came into my life. Now the living's fine. She fills my heart. She fills my heart.
It's always there. How long can this last? Can love be measured by the hours and the days?
They gave Legion of Merit and Legion of Honor. I'm sure they both deserve it. And in a small way, recently, we've been twice to Vietnam. Not that we think it's good, but at least as long as we got our boys there, we went. And I said, what do you want? I'm not campaigning. I said to the head colonel, I said, what can I do? They don't want to hear love songs. Maybe they'd like to hear some jokes or so, look at the middle of Playboy or something. No, you just sing them some songs and you watch. So in hospitals or wherever I'd sing, in bivouac areas and places way up in the Delta, with a small piano that we borrowed from the priest, they did for mass music, and we'd get up there and sing. This is, I call my Vietnam song because this was the one that they loved to hear the most. Are you ready, maestro? I can't forget the times we walked together, sharing the love I moonlight to light the way.
something to tell you. Before you sing your encore, I must tell you one. He's going to be out all night. You know that I went back to the Ambassador East Hotel and had dinner? Now listen, I want to tell you. Before you sing your encore, I want to tell you that your voice is better today. That's why I'm here. You want to say something to me?
Yes.
What? Jack, what do you want to say?
Your Jim Rum playing is better than it's ever been since I've ever known. Yeah. Now, but I'll get even tonight. What are you doing after the show?
Well, I don't know, but it's not what you're hoping. I'll be with you. But listen, really and truly, I'll tell you why I'm glad you're with me. You know, I don't usually get a co-star with a name as important as yours. Very seldom do they give me that kind of a star on a show. And I'm delighted.
Jack, what? That's lovely what you're saying, and I do appreciate it. But you see, we worked together before, Jack. You've forgotten.
When?
15 years ago. We were on the same show together. I was with you. We played in Portland, in Seattle, and San Francisco. Don't you remember?
15 years ago?
Yes. I even remember the show. It was you, and myself, and then we had, that wonderful Adagio team, remember?
Yeah.
Sure. Yes, and we had, the Marquee Chimps.
Chimps?
Yeah.
The monkey, yeah.
Yes.
Trying to think, one of the monkeys sang Granada.
That was me.
Oh,
here, look, I'll tell you something. I've been thinking, Jack, I don't usually look at my contracts, I leave that up to my manager. And he told me that you're paying me the same amount of money this time as you paid me 15 years ago.
What'd you say there?
He said, I'm going to be paid the same salary tonight and this week as you paid me 15 years ago.
Well, Tony, there's a very simple answer to that. I mean, don't blame me. I mean, blame Nixon. he froze it.
Mr. Nixon froze my salary?
He froze everybody's salary. There isn't one person sitting in this whole audience, not one person in this audience, that can get a raise in salary.
What about you?
I'm not in the audience.
All right. I just thought of something. Jack, maybe I was that chimp that sang Granada.
You could be right about that. But you know what? No, you're mad because you lost money. I am the general meeting.
Nah.
And I'll tell you something. As far as I'm concerned, we were playing for the fun of it.
Yeah.
I'll give you back your $110.
It was $120.
I'll give you back $120, and you won't have any. One.
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. Listen. It's going to take so long. Why don't you just give me back my check?
I cashed it already.
You cashed it?
While you were singing, This Is My Life. I'll tell you what. I'll take it. And if later on, if you're still upset, then I'll give you the money. Go ahead and sing your own. I hate sore losers.
I hate sore losers, too. But I love happy singers, and I've always been one. So, ladies and gentlemen, for my encore, may I sing for you my $120 rendition of Cole Porter's great arrangement of Begin the Beginning.
When they begin the dream this way. When they begin the game, to live again is past all endeavor, except when the tune
violin, you never do anything. You start a number, you never finish it. Why don't you just once play one number straight through? So with your approval, I'll get my violin. And I'll play. May I have my violin? Thank you. I don't think any young man could play this now, do you? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you that right after intermission, I promise you, after intermission, I'm going to come out. I'll have a beautiful Stradivarius violin, and I'm going to play for you maybe 2 or 3 hours. Whatever you want to do. You might as well sit here. Where are you going in Niles? So have your little intermission. Do what you want to do. Come back for a second. Incidentally, my very dear friend, I had dinner at their home last night. I haven't paid for a thing since I've been in Chicago. Not for dinner, not for golf. Mr. and Mrs. Irving Cupsonette. They're sitting right there. I'd like to have them take a bow. Take a bow. And thank you. Isn't that nice? Always invited to dinners. And I didn't have to pay for my golf. I didn't have to pay for anything. And I'm not, you know, people say I'm stingy and I'm cheap, and really, you know, I resent it sometimes. I don't deny it, I resent it. But anyway, go and have your little intermission, do whatever you have to do, and come back, and then I'll be back with the violin, and we'll have a lot of fun later. So. Different than the first half. By that I mean we don't repeat anything. How many of you saw the first half? Oh, then I can't repeat anything. Nobody saw the first half. Now I promise you, and there'll be no gag of throwing the violin. I do that to make the orchestra laugh. They scream. Now they've seen me do this a lot of times, have they? You laugh at it all the time? Every show I have to do new jokes or they walk out. It's a union rule that they have. But I promised you I'd play the violin. Tell her to bring out my violin and don't throw this one, please. This is my Strat. The fellow who just handed me my violin has worked for me for a long, long time, many, many years. The reason I've had him with me so long is because we both have the same type blood. You know, then I don't have to bother other people. But I'll tell you who he really is, because I'd like to get him back here. You know, when I do television, and I do a special, then I have a lot of writers, because you need them, and I write. But I keep one writer 52 weeks a year. I pay a writer 52 weeks a year, and this fella that threw the violin and brought this one out is my head writer. He's been with me, as I said, a long, long time. His name is Hilliard Marks, one of the best writers on television. Hilliard, take a bow. Bob, have a bow. Really, ad-lib. He's a beautiful ad-lib, really a great ad-lib comedian. And I told him, you know, how clever you were and everything. So, say something funny now. Isn't that an awful thing to think of? Say something funny. No, see if you can,
You ad-lib.
Well, that was very nice, and thank you very much. Is my salary frozen, too?
Yeah, if you don't say something.
Well, the only thing is, Jack, it's easier when we're sitting writing. And besides, I'm tired, really tired.
Is that?
Yeah. I gave you blood today.
You gave me blood yesterday, too.
I know, the day before.
You want some back?
Not at your price.
No, all right, get off. Ladies and gentlemen, this violin that I have here is a real Stradivarius, a real beautiful Strad. You can always tell a Stradivarius because of the label in here. Any musician will tell you that. In the label here, it says Antonio Stradivari, area code 213. No, this is really a beautiful Strad. It was made in 1729. It's a long time ago, 1729. You know, I told that one night to the audience when I played in Las Vegas, you know, the greatest jokes, let me preface it by saying, the greatest humor comes out of truisms, things that actually happened. Now, I gotta tell you what happened when I walked out with my violin. It was on a second show. You know, they do two shows a night in Las Vegas because of the gambling. And sometimes you get a heckler, a drunk in the second show who bothers you. And one night, all through the second show, there was a drunk sitting right at a front table, drinking and bothering me. And it annoyed me because I get on subjects and I don't know how to handle hecklers very, very easily. I don't know how to do it. And as a rule, I'm not bothered. But this fellow kept bothering me, and finally his friends around him kept him quiet. But after that, he said one of the greatest, funniest things I've ever heard, and I loved him for it. Because later on in the show, I came back and I said, ladies and gentlemen, this is a beautiful Stradivarius. It was made in 1729. And the drunk looked up at me and said, did you buy it new? I was ready to hire him as a writer. Isn't that funny? That actually happened. Many things that I, excuse me, that I talk about are true stories, like all the stories I tell about George Burns. No lies, everything. Later on, I'll tell you about George Burns. Some awful other things that he's done to me. Anyway, you know, when I give concerts, of course, I play all classical numbers. I have to. When I give a concert, yeah, I don't play them well. I play well enough for my purpose, and that's all. But I play as well as I can, because the critics usually have funny things to say the next morning. They don't pan me, you know. They say nice things, but they're funny. Like one critic said in the London Times when I gave a concert with the London Philharmonic, says, last night Jack Benny played the Mendelssohn Concerto. Says, like Heifetz, he held the violin under his chin. Else you're going to hold the violin unless you're Raquel Welch. I don't know where. Now, with the Boston Symphony, in Boston I'm known as the Van Gogh of the violinist. That's what they call me, the Van Gogh of the violinist, because as I was playing Mendelssohn, a woman got up in the third row and yelled, my God, he's lost his ear. Hey, the fellow who Van Gogh got that, by the way. Well, anyway, I might play a little classical number for you later, but I'd like to start out by getting hot. You know, playing a real jazz number. Ray, we'll play the jazz medley. Give me A, would you please? That's fine. Chrysler number. Now, look, in this number, Ray, this goes pretty lively. This Jack number, you see. You know what I mean? Lively and fast. You know, Largo. I want them to know I know what I'm talking about when it comes to music. Shall we do it? All right. This number, it's called The Bee by Schubert. And I always dedicate this number to the late Fred Allen, because this is the number that started the feud that I had many, many years ago on radio and television with Fred. And I'm sure the adults, you remember Fred Allen. He had a little boy, 10 years old, play the bee. And knowing that I listen to his shows, he made some derogatory remarks about me as a violinist. And then I answered him on my show. And then he answered me. Then I answered him. And this feud went on until this great, great wit passed away. And he used to say such funny things. And he was very acidy, you know, in his wording, and the things he said about me were so awful. We'd have to be close friends, or he wouldn't dare say them, you know, say the most terrible. But the funniest thing I think that Fred Allen ever said about me, you know, years ago, now, of course, as I mentioned before, there's a school in Waukegan named after me, the Jack Benny Junior High School, which I'm very proud of. But in those days, they didn't have this school, and yet Waukegan wanted to pay me a tribute. So they planted a tree in the courthouse square in Waukegan, Illinois, and they called it the Jack Benny tree. And in a short time, the tree died. And nobody could figure out why, except Fred Allen. And the next week on his program, in his nasal twang, you know how he talked, he said, "How can a tree live in Waukegan with a sap in Hollywood?" I wish I could say I thought of that, but I can't. But anyway, I'm going to play this number, and I dedicate it to Fred Allen. I'll play, Ray, I play the first four measures alone, without the orchestra, without accompaniment, you know. I believe they call it Acapulco. At Carnegie Hall once, I asked Leonard Bernstein, I said, don't they call that Acapulco? He said, C. Smart audience. The Bee by Schubert. No, I wasn't kidding about this being a very bad... Oh, I'm going to play it over here. Yeah. Being a Strat. This Strat is worth, I don't know, it could be worth $40,000 or $50,000. Maybe $60,000, I don't know. I wish you could play Gin Rummy. You know, years ago, that's the way all the orchestra leaders used to start. Instead of a baton or a lever, years ago, and they always started like this. They give the orchestra the tempo. That's the way Lawrence Welk started until he learned how to count. He used to go the B. Have I played it yet? I played it. I remember I start and I play the first four months. You know, I must say, I gave a concert not long ago with the National Symphony Orchestra in Washington, D.C., in Constitution Hall. And after the concert, I was invited to a cocktail party at the White House. And one of the reasons I was invited, because of my concert, so I was one of the honored guests. But I had to get to the White House very late at night because I had to greet a lot of people after the concert. So I go up real late up the White House steps and I got my fiddle case with me. Late at night, I'm going up the White House steps with my fiddle case. And you know, there are a lot of security men standing around. So one of them yelled at me. He said, "Hey, fella! What have you got in that case?" So I figured, you know, as long as he didn't know who I was, I'd have a little fun. So I yelled back, "I've got a machine gun in it." He said, "Thank God we thought it was your violin." Ray, if I forget the beat, then everybody forgets, but I do sometimes. But very fast. B by Schubert. I'll show you how good this orchestra is. One little rehearsal went right through without any problem, hardly had. And you know why I appreciate an orchestra and a good conductor? Because don't forget, for over 20 years, Phil Harris was my orchestra professor. And he didn't know one note of music. Imagine, 20 years he conducted for me, he didn't know one note of music. And I didn't know that. One day I caught him, whenever the orchestra stopped, he quit. He knew nothing at all. You know that he didn't even know the names of different instruments? I'll never forget, once we had Roberta Peters on the show, and she was going to sing a couple of opera numbers. So I thought it would be nice if we put a couple of harps in the orchestra. You know, Phil was loaded all the time, drunk. We put two harps in the orchestra. Phil came in drunk, and I swear he thought we were building a fence around it. What a character. This number you just heard me play, I'm going to do on my next special, which will be right after the holidays, I think. I think it's about that time when I do my next special. And I'm going to play this number with the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra. And I'm going to have a lot of guest stars on the show. I'm going to have, you know, Bob Hope and I, we exchange every year. I doubt that I'll get Sinatra back, because once he says he's going to retire, he retires, and you can take his word for that. But I'll try and get Mary back. I don't know if I can get her. And, you know, I'm not going to get a divorce just for that. And, of course, I'll have the closest friend that I have in the whole world, which is George Burns. And I'll get George Burns back on my show. And, you know, every time I play anywhere, I always talk about the dirty, lousy, stinking tricks that George Burns has played on me for the past, oh, really, 50 years. You know, we've been pals for over 50 years. And he can think of the most terrible things to do to me. And there's one story that I always tell. I told it here the last time I was here. I told it every time I play Vegas. And then I have some new things to tell you about your friends. But I always tell this one, and I'm almost embarrassed because so many people have heard it, but I've never done it on television. And yet I find that 60 or 70% of the people haven't heard it about the time he came into my bedroom in Minneapolis. Now, some of you heard it, but most of it. Anyway, all the stories I tell about Burns are true. You couldn't make them up. Anyway, I was playing in Minneapolis, and I was living at a place called the Radisson Hotel. And George Burns had to follow me in for the next week. So he came in my closing day on a Saturday morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, and he called me from the lobby. He said, "Jack, this is George. I'll be right up to see you." And I was tickled to death, because really, I love that guy, no matter what he does to me. So I thought to myself, what can I do to make him laugh? Because I can never make him laugh. He makes me laugh. I can't make him laugh. And it frustrates me. So I thought, what can I do? So here's what I did. It's a true story. I took off my pajamas, and I stood on top of the bed, nude. Absolutely new, see? Now I wanted to look real silly, so he laughed. So I took a book from the table and I put it on top of my head. For no reason, a book on my head. And I held a glass of water in one hand and a rose in the other. That's where I stood on top of the bed, nude, with a book on my head, a glass of water, and a rose. That's a pretty funny picture. Wouldn't you think that George Burns would have to laugh at that? Well, he must have suspected something, because there I was, I swear, stark naked, on top of the bed, with a book on my head, a glass of water, and a rose. There was a knock on the door. I said, "Come in," and he sent the maid in. Ha ha ha!
told that story. See, you can't keep it up. Cup has heard me tell that story, Cup's a net a thousand times. And if Stuart left, just tell it again, tell it again. The other night at his house, I said, do you think I dare tell that story again? I told him, and he said, they'll scream. I told him. But they're only funny because of the things that Burns can think of. Let me tell you what he did to me not too long ago. We both had a fly from New York, from Los Angeles to New York, to do a craft television hour. I was the guest of honor. Agnew was the host. And George Burns was the speaker. Johnny Carson was the toastmaster. So George and I flew together. We got in there the night before. And we took a suite of rooms at the Plaza Hotel. We took a big living room and two bedrooms. Now, wait till you hear what this man did to me. It's almost impossible to believe. Now, he's in one bedroom, I'm in the other. We got this big living room. Now, I wanted a rest because the next night we had to work. About 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't know when it was, I feel someone tugging at my arm. So naturally, I woke up, but I was numb. I didn't know what I was doing. And I look up, and there's George Burns standing in front of me with a deck of cards in his hand. So I look at him, and he says to me, take a card. Now, wait a minute. I'm not through yet. He says, take a card. When I tell you that I was so numb and so sleepy, I didn't know what I was doing. So when he stood there with a deck of cards and said, take a card, I took the card. Then he says to me, look at it. So I looked at it. Still numb. He says to me, put it back in the deck. I put the card back in the deck. He said, thank you, and went back to his own bed. Then he slept fine. I didn't sleep a lick. Only Burns could do a thing like that. What a character. I'll tell you one thing that I never told. I don't think I've ever told it on the stage, certainly never on television. He and I once decided to go. This is something that he said to me that was the most terrible thing you've ever heard. But you're a pretty sophisticated audience, and as long as it's a true story, I don't mind telling you. We both decided to go to Honolulu for a vacation, just the two of us. We flew to Honolulu. We lived in a place called the Elakai Hotel. And I even remember the night. It was on a Friday night. Because we dressed. You'd usually dress on Friday night. So George and I got dressed, black tie. We go down to have dinner. As we're having dinner, a man comes over to me, introduces himself, and says to me, Mr. Benny, and I introduced him to George, Mr. Benny, you can do me a great favor. I said, what is it? He says, I am also here from the mainland. I'm here with my grandmother. She is celebrating her 95th birthday today. She's the greatest fan you have ever had in your life. She has followed your career since you were a little kid, since you started in children, and she just loves you. Now, this is her birthday. This would be the nicest present if you could meet her. I said, well, of course I'll meet her. And I started to get up to go, and he said, no, no, you sit here with Mr. Burns. I'll bring her over, because we're through eating. Wait to hear the finish, you won't believe it. So we're sitting there eating, and along comes this fella with his grandmother. Now, she was actually 95, at least. And she sort of hobbled along on a cane. And there was a quiver in her voice. And she was stooped over. And the most beautiful face that you've ever seen, with white hair, really beautiful.
And she started to talk to me about what a great birthday present this was for her. And, you know, I could almost cry sometimes when I tell this story. Really. And she kept telling me how much she loved me and that she knew about me in vaudeville and in movies and in radio and in television. And this was her happiest day, this 95-year-old woman. And she kept saying that she loved me. And then finally she said, "May I kiss you?" So I stood up and gave her a kiss. And as she walked away with her grandson hobbled away, Burns turned to me and said, "Well, looks like you're all set for tonight." Now, only a dirty son of a bitch would dare say anything like that to anyone. Could you make up a story like that? I'm going to do something because I haven't got a finish. I never have a finish to my show. By the way, I must tell you, before I left, though, to come here, my doctor, I have a doctor who worries about me a lot. Not my health. He thinks I'm overdoing it. But at my age and my stage of the game, I shouldn't work so much. You know, and yet he keeps asking me to do benefits every minute. So he made me go to a hospital for a checkup for 5 days. So I went, bored to death. Before I came, I was for 5 days in the hospital. And he's a marvelous, he's the best surgeon. You know, the best surgeon, really, in Los Angeles. You should see what he charges, you know, for operations. Well, what they all charge for operations. No wonder they wear masks, you know. Digressing for a moment. You know, as I said, I never worry about endings of a show. I don't think that is important to an artist, to an entertainer. I think the most important part of your show, it's your first 10 minutes. How do you get started? You can always get off. You know, you got to get started right. That's the important thing. And that's what I worry about. I never worry about an ending. I can tell a big joke, get a laugh, say, you know. But I wonder sometimes if you realize what is in an actor's mind, an entertainer's mind. What is he thinking about as he concludes a show such as mine? And I know I do. At the end of a show, I think, well, let's see, what'll I eat tonight? Where'll I eat? How is the audience? Incidentally, you were just beautiful. Then I think to myself, did I give a good performance, or a bad performance, or a mediocre performance? These always enter an actor's mind, or a comedian, or an entertainer, when he concludes a show. And I'll try and show you exactly what I mean by that.
I guess that's about it for tonight. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. I can't get over the way that lady down front kept staring at me. I guess it was my eyes. They are rather sexy for a comedian. Sort of a lazy lagoon blue. I think sex appeal is very important to an entertainer.
Aww.
It's important to a butcher if you want to get bacon. Let's see. What should I eat after the show tonight? I'm so sick of cornflakes. Even with strawberries on. Maybe I'll have scrambled eggs with chicken livers. Nah, they always give me indigestion. I might as well have an orange plate. The hell with the strawberries. I don't know why I always listen to my doctor. What a waste of time it was going to the hospital for that checkup. And it's always so expensive. Gosh, what they charge for a room alone for 5 days. Then you have to have a morning nurse and an afternoon nurse and a night nurse. It all amounts to a lot of dough. 60 cents for an enema. They give you 3 a day. $1 right there. $2 with a tip. Who do you tip in a case like that? I don't mind the enema. I just hate the way they sneak up on it. One day, I was just picking up my shoes. I would lace them for $1 million. Reminds me of that song, Who Can I Turn To? Well, I might as well say goodnight and go eat my cornflakes. Maybe I will have strawberries. Well, goodnight, everybody.